Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the official Geek Speak podcast. I'm your very delirious host, Sean. And joined as always is my co-host, Josh, Boggart Honey, Rudy Rudolph. This is the podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for? And we finally did play games like 3 episodes ago for The Last of Us.
Oh yeah, we did.
We've done a few small games here or there. Nothing extreme yet, but we'll see. It's hard playing games on an audio-only medium. I think it's to think of games that you all can know what we're doing. Just, I regret putting on the intro. How are you doing today, Yosh?
Yosh here is just woke up and just chilling right now.
Boggart, honey, that will make sense in probably like 30 minutes, y'all.
Or maybe not at all.
I have not been this tired while recording in a very long time. This is going to be interesting. Oh, yeah, the more stuff to talk about at the beginning of the episode. My bad. Most episodes, we go through a different Disney Channel original movie, or DCOM for short, and we see how in a short period of time, the biggest media company on Earth, Disney, caters towards solely children with a large sample size, won't see any quality changes, etc. And today is not an exception to that. We have watched The Phantom of the Megaplex. Am I okay?
Probably.
You watched that movie, right?
Yeah.
That's good. I did too. So for new audience members, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a podcast where we have 4 main segments of the show. We have our DCOM to get into gear, to get some thing ball rolling, to get some ball rolling. Not some ball, I don't know what that means, but we're going to go with it. And then we go to our news of the week, followed by our main topic, whatever it may be, ending the show every week with our super weird story, which you'll know where it is when we get there. Josh, let's get some ball rolling.
Indeed, let's do it.
And we go through our different news segments, as well as our movies we watch, TV shows, etc. We generally give a yay or a nay. It kind of pisses some people off, I feel like, because we don't actually say if things are necessarily as good or bad. It's just more of like, what's the vibe? But that's the fun part.
Yes.
So, DCOM time, Josh. And also, if you have not, if you want to skip around, there are timestamps down below in the description, so you can just jump around to whatever part you want to specifically listen to. You know, if you want to avoid spoilers or something, or whatever. Also, if we discuss spoilers, it'll be very clear in the beginning of that segment. So, for our Disney Channel original movie, we watched The Phantom of the Megaplex. And again, for DCOMs, we usually spoil it completely because they're usually 20 years old. And if you want to watch it, it's 90 minutes on Disney Plus. Go ahead. Josh, take it over. What do you think this was about? What do you think it was about?
This is the Disney Channel / kids version of Phantom of the Opera, minus the creepy sex stuff and the music stuff.
And the you know, rich plot.
That the murder. There's a couple of things it's missing.
I wanted the murder in this so badly. That's not a joke.
But basically, it's about big movies gonna go on at big movie theater, and small child is assistant manager. Everything is going wrong. Small child has to run around.
Hold on. If people are picturing like a 5-year-old, no, like a 16, 17-year-old, not a literally small child.
Yeah, they got what it meant. There's a small child that helps also.
You're not wrong.
But he's got to hit gumballs with an ice hockey puck. He's got to do things to get the girl. There's a wind machine in the theater that's causing a tornado. There's a lot of things. Mickey Rooney is in this for some reason. It's a time.
You know, I didn't realize who that was at first. I knew the name Mickey Rooney, and I knew that face, but I didn't put them together. I was like, what the? Who is this? Who's this little dude? Because I don't see him on a lot. Whenever he pops up, he's always a little surprising to me. I don't expect him. He's just a little shocker. I don't like to keep him little. He is probably short, but still. This movie is... I had a very visceral reaction of pure boredom into it.
You see, I can understand that, but for me, I was more engaged because I've worked at a movie theater for several years, both as an employee and on the management side. So the whole time, I was just like, they're doing that wrong, they're doing that wrong, and okay. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
But also, some things have changed.
That, yes, I'm aware.
I worked at a movie theater for a summer, Josh. You know, I'm better than you, clearly.
Oh, of course.
I don't know why it makes me better. Not just like this. Not same, better. Jesus. Oh, what the fuck was that noise? I'm so sorry. I don't think today is my day. Just saying.
I think that means that it is your day.
I'm getting my t-shirt. Today is not... I don't think today is my day. This movie... Also, you said Wind Machine. It's one fan, for the record.
Yeah, but it causes the whole theater of that movie to go into chaos, because apparently people don't know what a fan is.
I think my biggest problem with this movie, everything in it is supposed to be based in reality, but all these unreal things happen that are still supposed to be actually, like, logically happening. And these DCOMs, because of the budget, that's usually a problem. I think it works better when they go completely unreal.
Yes.
If you add a bit of magic or supernatural stuff or, you know, monsters or aliens or something that makes it, or even just the wackier you go, it helps to distract from any problems it might have with how that thing is actually going on. Like, because the idea that this just reminds me of Better Things while watching it constantly. To me, I'd rather watch Phantom of the Opera first off instead of this.
What do you mean?
Or... I think this is just a bad Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah.
And even a bad Scooby-Doo movie is better than this. I'll be way more entertained. Juan, Boo Brothers exists. This is on par with a bad Scooby-Doo movie. But generally speaking, most bad Scooby movies are better than this. This was like almost so many other things that are more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, I want... There's a scene of them in a bathroom... It's like opening, we're going to call the cops, it'll come out right now. And it's like, this is a Scream movie without Ghostface. Can we just have Ghostface come in? There's like, please? A Scream movie set in a movie theater would also be really fun. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they haven't done that yet.
This movie just isn't fun. And that's its biggest problem to me.
Yeah. There's a point like halfway through where I was like, all right, I'm getting bored now. My enjoyment of it has disappeared.
It sounds like I'm hating this movie a lot. Well, I do. I actually do not like this movie at all. But there are some redeeming things to it, I think.
There's some good lines in this. Like, one of them I wrote down was the mom is talking to the her young daughter. And she was like, I told you last week I needed you to babysit. And the daughter replies with, was I listening?
There's a interesting speech in this movie from Mickey Rooney about the magic of cinema.
Yes.
While in a little dungeon. While in
a movie memorabilia dungeon.
And it's like, I'm not a villain. I love movies. Which is not a convincing thing, first off.
But his name is Movie Mason. That means he loves movies.
His name is Mickey Rooney.
Oh.
He's playing Mickey Rooney, Josh. Also, spoilers again for this movie. Were you at all surprised at any moment that Sean was the Phantom?
Not in the slightest.
Okay. Did you think it would be him from the beginning?
At first, no. But then once he got passed up for the general manager position, I'm like, all right, he's the villain. Because there's no one else.
Yeah, the second he on the phone, the general manager position thing happens. I was like, you're not going to be general manager. It's like, yep, you're the bad guy now. Cool.
And what's funny about this is that they don't try to make it seem like it's a supernatural kind of phantom. Like with Scooby-Doo, like there's always those elements of like they're trying to make it sound like that it's a, you know, actual ghost or something. But here, there's never that.
Yeah, like even the villain doesn't try and be an actual ghosty thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. A ghosty thing.
Ghosty.
Ghoul, if you. What is a ghoul?
It's Always Sunny Philadelphia has explained it to me several times, and every time I laugh because of it, but I don't remember what it is.
No, because no one can define ghoul. People say it's just a ghost. Now, why are there ghosts and ghouls? They're described separately.
The Ghostbusters aren't the ghoul hunters, because it doesn't sound as cool.
No, I mean, like, in me, they say ghosts and ghouls. And I'm like, what? If they're two different things, what separates them? These are the hard-hitting questions of this podcast.
As they should be.
Speaking of our ghoul, the Phantom Mickey Wright is not... Also, I'm surprised they didn't make him actually also real at the end.
Yeah.
They often, like, would cop out and be like, the Phantom was actually, ooh, a spooky hero all along, just in the background. Then why didn't it do shit? This movie opens with the idea of this theater was, like, destroyed with someone inside it.
I think specifically it was blown up with someone inside of it.
Yeah. Which, that's... Why did you reopen?
They kind of brushed past it.
And that's the Phantom, in theory. It's a rumor. But you know what? I don't think I'd go see a movie there.
No.
Especially a horror one. I'm picturing the guy who was blown up in there was just the last person in the watching a movie.
Probably.
You know, he was just watching the latest DCOM. And then, boom. Actually, DCOMs aren't in movie theaters. So it doesn't matter. He's watching... What year was this? 2000?
Yes.
He was watching... Brother Bear? What came out around that time? Did Brother Bear kill this man? I think so. That should be on a t-shirt. Did Brother Bear kill this man? Oh, what actually happened in this movie, though, Josh? Describe the plot of this movie, besides just little boy works a job.
So there's this kid whose name I don't remember. I'm going to call him Adam because that just seems like... there we go. Pete. And so he's in high school, he wants to get all the money and all the girls and stuff, because, yes, that's exactly what being an assistant manager at a movie theater will get you. He's got to get this theater ready for this giant premiere of a movie that's going to be happening there. But then that night, everything starts to go wrong, people aren't showing up, the place starts to just go into chaos mode, and it's just him trying to figure out, like, how to keep the whole place together and not lose his mind.
I want... a switch that turns the theater into chaos mode. Just a little button.
I would prefer that to not exist.
This movie is a weird one, but not in a good weird. Just in some of the choices they did are weird choices to make. The content of the film is not nearly weird enough, but they did some odd things. Like, why would you choose that route? Why does Movie Mason exist?
Because he loves movies.
As a writer of the screenplay, why do you add him... why would you add this character?
Maybe Mickey Rooney just showed up on set and wouldn't leave.
I can't describe Movie Mason. He is an old man who does not work at a movie theater, who goes to work every day, unpaid, hands in his work schedule. He makes for himself to the assistant manager, who throws it away in front of him.
I think it explained that his ancestors were the ones that originally opened the first theater there, but I don't...
Ancestors?
I don't know. Some kind of relative.
Yeah, they're his family. Like, it's his... He is who the theater should be... He's who the owner should be, in theory. He cares so much, but, like, move on. Go to a different theater. He's so weird. I think he shouldn't exist in this movie. Not the actor Mickey Rooney, but the character Mickey Rooney.
The character Mickey Rooney.
You know what I'm saying. Movie Mason doesn't exist in this movie. Mickey Rooney only exists as Mickey Rooney.
Again, I think he just wandered onto set one day, and no one wanted to say no to him, so they just wrote him into the movie.
Oh, hold on. Let's back up a second. Because before I get into the weirdest more of Movie Mason, let's talk about some hard-hitting Disney tropes that still exist. In this DCOM, like the single parent trope.
They really love to use that trope.
I thought they were going to have the dad be the one who was blown up at first. Because how funny would that have been?
That would have been so strange. Because Pete's younger brother and sister really love movies. And he doesn't, but he's the one that works at the movie theater. And just a weird dark twist that would have been like, oh yeah, our dad died in the theater.
But it would be more interesting. I just don't get this movie. And I sound like I'm being harsh. I know. And I am being harsh. But there's a reason. I didn't like it.
This is so random for a Disney Channel movie because this is a new version of Phantom of the Opera. But why?
I guess it's so parents were like, oh, this is kind of like, this is reminiscent. Why not? Let's put it on for our kids because it's a version they can see. You know, for the parents who are obsessed with Phantom of the Opera. Every parent.
Of course.
The best demographic to pick.
The Gerard Butler version hadn't come out yet, so they couldn't have been obsessed with it.
I thought you were going to say Gerard Way, like the singer from My Chemical Romance, which is, I think he should be Phantom of the Opera, totally.
I mean, he could sing better than Gerard Butler.
He also is a DM for Dimension 20. He plays Dungeons and Dragons. And he's a voice actor. He's a cool person. Like, unrelated. Just a really cool dude. The movie starts. All the employees are at work. None of them are wearing uniform until that night.
Yeah.
But they're still at work.
Yeah, like, I'm worried about, like, they're getting paid, and yet none of them are wearing their uniforms.
I don't know how movie theaters functioned in the mornings 20 years ago, but it's not like they're closed and they just got there early for set up and stuff. No, there are customers there, patrons.
I love how in his opening, like, voiceover, Pete's like, we have over 20 theaters, we do, like, 7,000 people on, like, a busy weekend, we have over 50 people working a day, and then for this, you know, big premiere night that's a packed, you know, house, there's, like, 7 people total.
Also, why are people still in the theater at this premiere night?
Because they got movies to see.
No, but why were the movies scheduled to still play?
Because you can't have this movie without that.
I know! Stop making these weird contrivances, movie, that don't make sense. That's my issue. So one of these movies, like I said before earlier, is supposed to be, like, realistic, like, based in reality. And they just don't follow how the real-world logic works for things. And not even interesting ways. They're just like, that doesn't make sense kind of thing. I want to go watch fucking Waterboy. What's this one? You know, the Mermaid Man. Let's watch that one instead, Josh. 13th year. Let's watch. Because that one was at least gay.
That's the requirement now.
I mean, it's more interesting than this. This is a very straight movie.
It's so funny, like, some of the moments that happen. Like I said, he cleans up gumballs that spill all over the floor, not by, you know, grabbing a broom and sweeping them up real quick, but by grabbing a hockey stick and shooting them into a trash can while there's patrons around cheering him on. I'm just like, what?
I didn't write any notes down, and I want to respond at this point to you.
So remember in the beginning when Pete's at home and he's eating a bowl of something?
Oh, hold on. I'll stop right there. I unfortunately remember all of this. Go on.
What was he eating in that bowl?
Was there food in it?
He was eating something, but it didn't look like food I'd ever seen before.
My guess is like oatmeal or something then?
No.
No?
It was some weird green thing, and it wasn't spinach either, so I don't know what... It was a big bowl, also.
I think it was supposed to be probably a salad, then.
That was too wet and thick for a salad.
You know, you don't eat... You're just juicy salads. You're moist salads, Josh.
If you're eating moist salads, I think you're eating salads wrong.
I know some people who, like, cook their salads.
That makes more sense.
Does it?
I don't know.
I'd rather have wet lettuce than warm lettuce.
We'll add that to a t-shirt also.
We need to make a merch line of just weird lines. Actually, please email us in your favorite moment of the show so far. Because I'm making a TikTok page for this show. I'm going to make some good funny moments on there. Because I think there are some funny moments. I think we said something funny in 38 episodes.
Probably.
Wait, there was something relevant about two episodes ago we were supposed to discuss. Oh, yeah. Guys, Shazam episode, it wasn't late. You want to know why? It's now on DVD soon.
So if anything, we timed it perfectly.
Yeah, totally. That's my one bit of news. Go on, Josh.
What was the movie that was premiering was called Midnight Mayhem, and there was a T-Rex on the poster. But what was the movie about? Because they never say what it was about.
No, and at one point, a little boy, not the main little boy, the littler boy, he goes in the manager's office and reads the plot of the movie.
But again, the film even said that what's the selling point of the movie is that nobody knows what it's about. And the kid's like, oh yeah, it's on the site. We can look it up.
Well, it's not on the website. It's the managers have their own private database of what of all the movie stuff.
No, he said there was he said it was on like a spoiler movie like website thing.
Oh, and the movie's not out yet? How does it get there?
That's what I'm saying.
That's stupid. Screw you, DCOM. Be better.
This part irked me as a theater employee and manager. When there's a giant line of people that they're tearing tickets for them to go to their theaters, they're not telling them what theater they're supposed to be going to. They're not checking, you know, times. They're not checking the IDs. They're just, like, tearing tickets and just shoving them away.
And no one is waiting in that line. They're just walking past.
Yeah!
At least in an actual theater, people will wait in the line, usually. That was a weird thing, because they don't want to get kicked out, and there's high risk of getting kicked out if you didn't go through the proper line. It's weird. I think a dinosaur, let's talk about that, because it's a giant blow-up dinosaur. It's supposed to be on the roof, but the Phantom, Sean, not me, Sean, movie Sean. I'm also movie Sean, but not that kind of movie Sean. You know, the one in this. He apparently brought the giant dinosaur down into the theater over the premiere and blew it up as it was happening so it would go and attack them. It grabs them and eats them. It's a blow-up dinosaur, and it's spaced perfectly, apparently, for that to happen. When we say blow-up dinosaur, you're probably thinking, like, you know, one of those costume-sized ones. No. Like, room-sized, which, how does that exist?
It's so weird, because, like, there's only two... Basically, so what his plan is just scare them with the blow-up animals... And that's going to ruin the premiere.
Why is it working?
I don't know.
Also, no one's questioning a child running and jumping with a sword in his hand.
Because he's an employee there. He's doing his job.
He jumped off of a balcony with a sword in hand to try and stab this thing. In reality, he would have bounced off and fallen and stabbed himself. That boy should be dead. Not, like, I want him dead, but, like, I mean, it's based on things happening in real life, that would have happened. But also, I have more questions. Sean the Phantom tied himself up twice.
He did it twice!
Different ways.
The second...
And both ways were effective, actual tying to get...
The second time is even funnier because it's in his office and he's hanging off of the door tied up. So he either had to tie himself up first or hang himself up first, then tie himself. Either way, it's funny.
I think he went to magic camp.
Wouldn't surprise me.
He also was banking on people finding him at the right times.
Yeah.
If those kids were not inquisitive enough, then the premiere would... And he would have... Sean would have... Lost? I don't know if he... I don't know. Because they were the right amount of inquisitive to make him almost succeed, but too inquisitive to make him actually fail, which makes no sense. Why did he tie himself up twice?
Who knows? There's also this little subplot with, like, this jock that's trying to get with the same girl that Pete's trying to get with. And at one point, there's a contest of, like, pulling the sword out of the stone to get free movie passes. And the jock does it, but the chaos is happening, so he can't get his passes. He's just like, I demand passes. And Pete's just like, I'll get you passes later. He's just like, well, what are you going to do? And I'm just like, what?
He did say come back tomorrow, though. And as well, theater patrons would be mad about that.
Yeah, well, oh well. But then he's like, I'll come back to kick you out later. And then we never see him again. And not only that, he put the sword back, which I feel like is your proof that you won the contest.
That's a good point.
But then the funniest thing about that is that the girl that Pete liked still hadn't, like, chosen a guy yet. And then out of nowhere, she's just like, I'm with him now. It's like, she's a part of their group as they, like, try to solve the ending. I'm just like, wait, what? How do we get to this point?
Even an actual celebrity in the movie refers to him as his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's weird.
This movie should be a horror movie. Like an actual horror movie.
Yeah, there's never an actual attempt to scare.
There's no attempt to do anything in this movie, Josh.
You're not wrong.
Yes. Also, not a weird side plot, like the one you mentioned. The mom is on a date. The kids want them to get engaged really badly.
Yes.
And at the end of the movie, this man proposes to her and from everyone for virtually zero reason.
Because he's someone's just like, oh, we need some kind of like big finale or something like that, which is random for some for anyone not in a movie to say.
Yeah, life isn't, you don't have a finale, you have the next 20 minutes, the next hour, the next day, you know, it's not really, that's not how that works. But more so on that, he changed his mind because of a plant metaphor.
And it's so stupid!
It's not even a good metaphor. I give this movie a nay.
Yeah, I'll probably give it a nay too. It was a fun, like, one time of just seeing what movie theaters were like in the early 2000s, but now I'm just like, I don't want to watch this again.
I would rather watch the vampire one from last week.
Yeah.
Because those kids were way more fun to watch, more enjoyable to, like, to watch for 90 minutes than these kids, too. Are you ready to move on, Josh? You have any more thoughts?
No.
Final thing to say about this DCOM.
It's a thing.
On that note, let's go to the news. We had news this week, Josh.
Crazy.
As we do every episode, that's part of the show. The WGA strike marches on. And that will continue to be the case for quite some time. So be prepared for more shows delaying, more reality TV shows, and studios attempting to write AI shows for no reason, for some dumb reason.
Yay.
But also, we've had a lot more celebrities come out and be in support of this strike, which is, I mean, a lot more writers and directors and actors have come in and be support that we didn't, might not have thought about. Like, Matt Reeves was on the picket lines. I love that.
Yeah.
And so I do like that a lot. We also got word from Deadline that Seth MacFarlane and the showrunners for American Dad and Family Guy are halting all work until the strike ends, doing a fair deal for writers. That's great.
Very good.
The Mandalorian is halting all production on the new season until, you know, the writer's strike ends. Another good thing. This is the way. I am generally excited for good quality shows to make that choice, and then shows to realize, we can get past this. Yeah, let's try it. Like what Lost did and Heroes. And we all know what happened there. Heroes is like the most infamous example of that from 2007.
Yeah.
You've probably even heard about that. Yeah. Season one, phenomenal. Season two, what the fuck? Because everyone, you know. Strike happened and then the writer, people just carried on without the same writers at all. They just hired people. Yay for writer strike going on because that means they're actually causing disruption.
Yay.
Mario movie, Josh. It has passed $1.2 billion.
You know, I would think this would be cool if it was an actual, like, quality movie.
The shade from Mario. I'm from Josh. You're Mario now.
Yes, I'll throw the shade because no matter what, this movie was going to print money. And it pisses me off that they didn't put in more effort.
You heard it here first, folks. Josh is a Mario movie hater and he hates fun and children.
Correct.
Here's news that's really funny to me because of what we talked about. Two episodes ago. Literally, again, two episodes ago. Not like long episodes ago. Shazam! Fury of the Gods has ended its theatrical run, which is very funny. And it ended it with $133 million.
Not just domestic, worldwide.
That's so bad!
It's so amazing how Warner Brothers just left that film to die.
It's really upsetting, actually. It should have been marketed a lot better. It shouldn't have had Wonder Woman in the marketing. It shouldn't have had bad... They should have actually pushed it out. Both Shazam movies kind of flopped, and neither should have.
Yeah, like, the first Shazam was a movie set at Christmas, would have worked perfectly at the Christmas season, but Aquaman was coming out that time, so they're like, and no one cares about Shazam, we'll put it out in April. Because, yeah, that makes sense.
People at Warner Bros. Were saying, I forgot if it was Zaslav or if it's Gunn, one of them said the other one thought Shazam was sent out to die. And it was. It shouldn't have been. I think it was David Zaslav said that that Shazam was sent out to die for the Gunn's new universal sling. And I'm like, bud, you were in charge.
You were in charge of this whole operation. Like, I can understand the idea that Gunn's announcement made people go, ah, that doesn't matter. But I can tell you for a fact, most general audiences don't know about the reboot, so it didn't affect them.
It did for anyone who actually knew who Shazam was, I think, though.
Yeah, but I would still, even if I was someone that had, like, a huge investment in it, I wouldn't be like, ah, I'm not gonna bother with this at all, it doesn't matter anymore. No, I would still go see it.
Yeah, I hate the idea that because what this series is, when this thing is a part of is ending, the movie doesn't have worth anymore. It happened in New Mutants, which was a fun movie. It's not great, but it's fun. And it happened to, like, it happened to a lot of movies. Or, like, for instance, the Divergent series. It never finished.
One movie left to make.
But it doesn't mean that you should just stop. You should inherently just discount that whole series with the last movie because, you know, they didn't finish it. That's not how that should work. The movie still exists. You should still watch what was made. I don't know. And it didn't really set up a sequel either, so it's fine. It should have had a different ending, which we discussed 2 episodes ago. It just came out like 2 days ago. You all should check it out. I have other DC-related news, Josh.
Cool.
Which, it's not chaotic news.
Aw.
But isn't that refreshing, though?
I guess.
Dear God, I'm tired of DC chaotic news.
That's true. DC's chaotic news has been kind of at the forefront for a while now.
We have Superman Legacy potential news.
Oh, yeah.
We have, from the Hollywood Reporter, they put out this whole article. And apparently, there are numerous rumored things going on. Let's talk about Lois Lane first. You know who Lois Lane is.
Yes.
I saw many replies saying, what about Amy Adams? Where is she and stuff? Guys, it's a new universe. They're doing new casting. It's a whole new thing.
Snyder fans, those are done.
Well,
move on.
I heard that but I've heard about the Amy Adams thing. I think a lot of people just don't know it's happening yet. So you see casting rumors for Lois Lane, they don't really, just casually, who are like, keeping up with things. I'm like, oh, are they recasting Amy Adams? You know, most people, until there is a new movie actually out in theaters, general audiences, I don't think, will know that there is a reboot.
Yeah, I think that DC should rebrand the films going forward so that people can tell distinctively that this is something new.
Put DC Studios very clear.
Yeah.
Because that was not a thing before. Like how Marvel Studios, I know people have avoided things like Venom or X-Men or Fantastic Four or whatever while the MCU was going on because it didn't have the studios part of the logo in it. I remember people called and it's like, oh, it's like it's Marvel's like B-list or something. I'm like, I mean, yeah, kind of. Anyway, we have 2 Margot Robbies on this list of potential Lois Lanes. And by that, I mean Emma Mackey and Samara Weaving. That's also not an insult. I mean, they look similar. I'm not trying to discount their talent. It's just saying there are more Margot Robbies. I mean, compared to their faces, I just thought it'd be a funny joke. But they have the same face. And it's actually confusing because they were in a movie together recently. Babylon, with Samara Weaving, right?
Yeah.
Emma Mackey, Rachel Brosnahan, Phoebe Dynevor, and Samara Weaving are the mixed way Lois Lane in Superman Legacy. These are all good actresses.
Yes.
Literally all of them. But I like all 4 of these potential castings. I really think Emma Mackey, you said Sex Education, right?
Yes, she's very good.
Samara Weaving, I think, is one I've seen the most of these 4 people. I think she's really, really talented. I'd be fine with any of these actresses. Again, me saying 2 Margot Robbies was not being serious. I want to be very clear. They're fantastic and individual and unique and amazing. Again, I also just want to say amazing in the current context of what we know now. As we've learned with Ezra Miller and Jonathan Majors. Okay, it's mostly male-presenting people. People can suck that we don't know about yet. So when we praise an actor, please understand, we can't read the future yet.
Yet.
Also in this article, we have other casting potential things with Nicholas Holt and David Corenswet as potentially both maybe the 2 frontrunners are now for Superman. There was a discounted rumor that Nicholas Holt was for Lex Luthor. That was corrected. It was a miscommunication. He was up for Superman, apparently. Which is really funny because he was like the number 2 choice for the Batman in the Batman. And now he's like, I'll be Superman instead. Which is really, it makes sense because in comic books, Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent look almost indistinguishable from each other.
Yeah, I definitely think he could do the Clark Kent stuff very well.
People have been fan casting David Corenswet now for like 3 years as a young Superman because he looks like a young Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in Pearl.
Oh, yeah, he was really good in that. But I haven't seen him in anything else.
A lot of people like him in The Politician as well. So I have not watched The Politician yet, but I know Ben Platt is very old for that part.
So what you're saying is that Ben Platt needs to be Superman.
That is exactly what I'm saying, Josh. Ben Platt for Superman. You heard it here first. Do you have any thoughts on any of these casting rumors? Like, yay, sure, whatever, or no, or whatever? You know, no, or whatever?
if these prove to be true, I think that'd be pretty cool. But even Gunn said that to kind of like take any kind of things like this with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of people that have, you know, been in consideration and everything.
I love when he is mad at people on Twitter. It's spat out lies.
I'm so happy that he's actually like shooting down rumors and stuff. It's very nice.
But it also leads to people to more rumors of like, he didn't say no to this one kind of thing. James Gunn has also said, this is a small news piece, that he said one person has been cast already in Superman Legacy so far. One person. And it isn't any of the regular players in the Superman world. So it's just some side person. Spy Kids reboot. We're getting that, Josh. First off, why?
But everything is inevitable.
Zachary Levi and Gina Rodriguez are starring in it, which is an interesting duo.
I'll see what it's like. I think they both got good comedic chops.
I think it's really funny if they play Ginny and Carmen, because both those actors are still around and still like acting.
They played the adult versions of themselves in the fourth one with Jessica Alba.
Right, so this reboot is just them again, but trying again to be really funny to me. But honestly, I never heard of a reboot of anything from the same creator. So I'm really down for that idea, actually.
I don't want it to be Rodriguez, because his visual style for these movies is not good. I hate how they look, and I hate how they feel.
I hear you. That's why a lot of people like them, though. So most people I know, that's part of their charm. I don't think any of the three of them are that great. I actually am the person who likes the third one the most, and everyone hates me for it. It walked, so Ready Player One could stumble.
I hate that Rodriguez is doing these movies again, because after like Alita: Battle Angel, I'm like, oh, so you can do something different and neat and interesting with really good action and direction. And now you're doing this stuff again. Why?
But my news piece is that it will be, we have a release date now, which is your favorite thing.
When's it coming out?
Late 2023, so release window, I guess.
So it's already been filmed.
Yes, it's finished.
Oh boy.
And the effects are going to be great. Speaking of, you know, flames and destruction, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
You see the new trailer came out?
Like, yes. This week?
Okay, what do you think?
It's got Einstein in it. That's all I need.
That was bizarre, right?
Seeing Einstein or just the trailer?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting. It's still a very, very whitewashed version of history, which I'm not a fan of, but sure. I'm going to see it. I'm going to see Barbie first.
I like seeing people being like, oh, this is like saying that creating an atom bomb was like a good thing and that saved humanity. I'm like, pay attention to the trailers. There are specific moments of where it's just like, you have just doomed humanity with the creation of this.
Literally every poster is framing Oppenheimer as a villain.
Like, there's not a single thing from this that's like, this is a good thing.
It's about this sadistic man who thought this was a good idea to make this.
Like, the film is literally going to be going from full of color and hope and everything to dark black and white after he created the bomb.
Because Nolan's artsy, Josh. He's an auteur. You don't get it. Special. He's different.
He made Tenet. Remember, temporal pincer movement.
Inception. The Prestige, Josh.
That's a good one.
Hugh Jackman.
Christian Bale. Now we're just saying things.
The Meg 2. Wait, that's our next news. Numerous things. Did you see these posters by chance? I had them for you if you have not seen them yet. And I gotta say, the tagline of New Meg, Old Chum is hilarious.
They understand what kind of movie they're making.
New Meg, New Chum for new characters. Because this is just like, this is fun. The first one has, my review of it was big sneaky start. Why it's so sneaky? Wait, there's two? That's the movie. That review is the entire movie. I don't have other things to say about the movie, but it was fun. See, that's what all DCOM should be. That level of nonsense.
I just love that now there's just more of them.
Did you watch the trailer for it?
Yeah, it looks so stupid, but I love it.
Statham just... Also, that thumbnail is fantastic of Statham on the pier holding his foot up to the shark's mouth. And stopping the shark.
Because he's Jason Statham.
Jason Statham is a caricature of himself in movies at this point.
The best role he's ever done is in the Melissa McCarthy movie Spy. He is so funny in that.
The best role he's ever done is in The Meg, Josh.
Ah, you're right.
Speaking of freaky things, we have Freaky Friday sequel. We're getting a sequel that's in the works currently with both Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis reprising their roles.
Yay.
Which is confusing. What is the... Is it going to be that are it's they, a mom and grandma now?
Are they going to do it? Or is, like, Lindsay's kids going to have it happen to them? Like, what's going to happen here?
Is it going to be Jamie Lee Curtis just swapping with her with different people in her own mind?
I feel like this is kind of a film that shouldn't happen.
What if no one swaps in it? They're just dealing with the trauma of the first one. It's a, like, hardcore, so, like, sob story drama, yellow screen match kind of movie.
I don't know. I just have a feeling that this is just going to go straight to Disney Plus.
Make it introspective, weird, and sad. Freaky Friday 2. Now we're in therapy. Nay.
Nay. Like, I like those two, but I just don't want this to exist.
Yay or nay to Oppenheimer trailer?
Yay.
And yay or nay to Meg trailer?
Oh, hard yay.
We have a hooray here, folks. We have also companies doing a little dance, making a little love, getting down tonight. With Disney Plus combining with Hulu by the end of 2023 to a new platform. Those will still have separate platforms, but you can get the combined version.
I guess that'll make it easier to find, like, certain things.
That'll be great for grandmas.
Oh, yeah.
Disnulu Plus. His knee. Disney for boys. It's his knee. Josh, we found his knee. Oh, God. Nay. I don't want companies merging any sort of way anymore. I think it reminds me of that skit from Futurama. Wait, we're just making by and large, Disney. What the fuck?
I mean, to be fair, Disney owns Hulu.
I know, but now you're making it more obvious to the general public. You're like, we're going to test the waters, see if we can make by and large with more and more companies merging into the... Because like having companies be owned by other companies, like most people do not know, Amazon owns Twitch. Amazon owns IMDb. Stuff like that. But that's not generally known. This is them testing the waters to see if we can have it under one name. I'm like, no, we don't want to have all one name, one company. We already own everything. Just hide it from us.
Please hide it.
We don't want to be reminded that we are in this awful hellscape of a world. Yay or nay on companies doing a dance?
Eh, nay.
I have the most wild out-of-pocket news we've had in a very long time, Josh. Deadline is reporting that a new movie has been cast called Flight Risk, starring Mark Wahlberg, directed by Mel Gibson, following a pilot who is transporting a dangerous criminal for trial. When I tell you I laughed so hard and said, are we really doing this right now? When I first saw this.
Did Mark Wahlberg tell Mel Gibson the story of how he could have prevented 9/11?
Did Mark Wahlberg tell him a story of how he, you know, committed hate crimes?
Oh, Lord.
Mark Wahlberg is a racist, awful individual still. We make jokes about him on here because he's not a good dude. He's just still in stuff, and he has to keep coming up.
He just keeps showing up.
Like Uncharted. He's the wrong choice, but he's there. This is a bizarre movie. How is this greenlit?
Because, who knows?
Mel Gibson should not be making movies anymore. This movie is a burning pile of shit. I'm not going to see it. Josh, I can say, probably won't see it, because it's not the kind of thing we should really support.
No.
We are ending the news with Michael Keaton.
Cool.
And other things. You've watched a movie?
A few.
Have you? Are you sure?
I think so.
I'm not so sure. You can tell this podcast, I'm slowly waking up. Which is fascinating to see in real time. We have a whole lot this week of Beetlejuice 2 news.
Oh, yeah.
First off, we have confirmation, like, double, triple confirmation at this point. Because we talked about this, like, a few months ago, and it's like, isn't this already confirmed this week? I'm like, yes, it is. Confirmed again? So, it's confirmed again, y'all. It'll release in 2024. So, next year. That's how math works. 36 years after the first film, which is weird in perspective to me. And I keep thinking, oh yeah, Michael Keaton's a lot older than he used to be. And we have casting news that Jenna Ortega is going to be in the movie as the daughter of Winona Ryder's Lydia Deetz. So that's kind of fun. That she was like rumored before, but this is that's good casting for that, I feel like. However, want Jenna Ortega to branch out now after seeing her things like The Fallout and Scream 5 and 6. Like, I'm excited to see what else she does.
She seems smart enough to know that this is not really like, oh, I want to be big franchises. No, she's doing it as a calculated career move.
My thing with it is that after coming off of Wednesday playing Lydia Deetz's daughter, like, oh, that's not the most like original choice in the world. But also, she might just love Tim Burton now, working with him.
It could very much be that. Or again, a lot of zeros in the check.
You know, we love those zeros. And we got, of course, the news that Winona Ryder with that will be returning, according to Deadline, in Beetlejuice 2. As well as in really out of context, weird, fun casting, that Willem Dafoe will be in Beetlejuice 2. Make him Beetlejuice. Just kick out Michael Keaton. Make Willem Dafoe. Make him play some weird demon. Like, you know how those, like, the weird dune sandworms in Beetlejuice? Make him one of those. I'm fine with Willem Dafoe playing pretty much any role ever.
I just had a thought. Are they going to bring back Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin? And if they are, how are they going to deal with the Alec Baldwin stuff?
They're ghosts.
Ah, true.
You can just have... They could just be in a different house now. Or like they can. I mean, like, the main cast will just be in a different house. Lydia will be, because she's grown up, she'll have just moved out of that haunted house at some point, I feel like.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You think?
Or a ghost. They're going to CGI Alec Baldwin, Josh. Young Alec Baldwin.
Oh, God, that'd be terrible.
They might be CGIing those two ghosts.
Don't say that.
That's very likely at this point. You know that. Ending on weird CGI monsters is the end of our news, leading into more CGI monsters for our main topic. Any thoughts on the final, the Beetlejuice 2 castings overall and the news we had so far, yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay! It's time for the Spiderwick Chronicles, a movie you all probably surprised we're watching for this podcast. Guess what? We're surprised too. The reason for it? It's on HBO. That's literally the reason for it. Like, we haven't seen this in a while. Wanna watch it? Yeah, this seems a fun discussion. And it is gonna be a fun discussion, because... You know what? It's fun.
I haven't seen this since I was a child. It's been a very long time.
I have seen it twice before this. I owned it on DVD, but never got myself to put it on fully. I almost always watch it 20 minutes and then something came up. I watched it last in 2019. And I'm like, I always forget. This also will have spoilers in it. this movie's out, been out for a long time. Come back to this episode, watch the movie on HBO Max, go watch the movie on HBO Max, and come back and watch this. Listen to this. Okay? Everyone good? Cool. This movie, Josh, is fun. I will say that first off. I had a good time. But I always forget what happens at the end because it's such a forgettable, dumb ending.
Yeah.
I think this movie is a great TV show. Cringe and 9 minutes.
It's what's funny is that it starts out pretty good and well-paced, and then it just quickly, like, just starts rushing through stuff to hit that 90-minute mark.
That's what I told you about before I watched this. I said, because I've read all 5 books before, I said to you that, from my recollection, this does the first 2 books with good pacing and rushes, like, the last 3. I told you that before you watched it. And I stand by that.
Yeah.
I think this would be a great 2.5-hour movie, or make it a season-long show. One season to miniseries. And you can add, I'm not saying change much stuff to the books necessarily. I'm just saying you can add a lot more to it. You can develop Jared more, develop Simon more, show their relationship, show Mallory, show her life, what she, why she's in the fencing. I also recall in the book, we actually see her in fencing class as well. There's more of their lives that's just missing. I would have enjoyed seeing that. Also, this movie casually mentions suicide and, like, infidelity.
It's a strange kids movie.
It is a strange kids movie. I don't think it's bad. Like I said, this is a fun watch to watch for the first 2/3, I think.
Yeah, one of my biggest problems with the movie was how it kind of it sets up this interesting world, but then there's a point of, like, where it just, like, doesn't go further with exploring it or really explaining anything.
But I've told you before that this movie is just, you know, Disney is just... Gravity Falls is Disney Spiderwick, and it's very true. Dipper Pines is Simon and Jared merged together.
Yeah.
And there's even twins in both franchises. The Journal being obsessed with the idea... Well, actually, there should have been more obsession with the idea of the author in this, especially since they're related. Also, I don't want to say spoiler Gravity Falls. I don't want to do that, but you know what I'm thinking about right now with the author.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities in those 2 shows. I do believe that Alex Hirsch, when pitching Gravity Falls, might have referenced Spiderwick.
He probably did.
And its success. This should have been longer, like how Gravity Falls was longer. It's good books. It's good characters. I really, really love Freddie Highmore's performance in this. He definitely plays what seems like an autistic person in this better than he does in The Good Place.
You mean The Good Doctor? No,
not The Good Place. The Good Doctor.
It's like when I saw 2 Freddie Highmores, I was just like, ah, 2 good doctors, ah!
So, briefly, I'm actually going to touch on that, because I have a unique perspective on that show. I'm not going to get into more about that right now. But The Good Doctor, everyone keeps clipping the I Am a Surgeon thing. I am absolutely okay with mocking that show. I am okay with mocking Freddie Highmore for taking an autistic role while not being autistic, and for him advocating for Autism Speaks, an ableist organization. Don't mock the actual content of that clip, that specific clip, though, because, like, there are actual autistic people who have meltdowns similar to that exact experience where you're stuck in repeating the same words or phrases and getting louder and kind of just stuck on a loop. That can happen to people. So that one scene in particular is not the worst depiction ever. He is overacting, probably, that he's overacting the whole show. And if you pull out almost any other clip, he's still being a caricature of autism, not, like, actually being autistic. And didn't reference anyone who's like, didn't actually ask autistic people. First off, if he should take the part, or secondly, how to act the part, you know? But like that one clip, maybe mock the actor, not that exact performance. Anyway, Freddie Highmore's in this twice. One of them is probably autistic, and that's Simon, not Jared. He's just wild. Jared is a menace, but rightfully so, I think, in this movie.
Yeah.
I love Jared in this movie so much because, first off, this kid is iconic. He starts out with giving his mom the silent treatment and doesn't break it.
No.
Like, not in a, like, I don't recommend that. I'm just saying, sticking to it is bold. This movie, if you're not familiar with the story, these triplets, well, not triplets, these twins and their older sister, Mallory's definitely older. Mallory, Simon, and Jared. Jared and Simon are the 2 twins. Both of them are Freddie Highmore. People were convinced they actually were twins for a long time. Were you convinced as a child?
I mean, yeah. I never had any reason to doubt that. And for 2008, having two of them in the same scene together, it actually was very impressive.
I was watching off that a lot about how they did it. They're rarely the same frame with their same face showing. Like, very few shots of that, because it's smart. He clearly also had a body double for, you know, make things easier, to not have to reshoot things twice. They don't do a lot of J&L cuts with the voice, which surprised me.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes, to help sell that effect, you would do more, like, cuts that have audio of one character overlapping one of the other character, because that way it shows that they're in the same room. They did it very rarely here, and that was very shocking, but it honestly worked. I never really doubted them both existing. Yeah, so these three kids and their mom, who I forgot the name of, I think it was just mom, move into this old creepy house, the Mystery Shack. Nope, wrong show. and it's just this old mansion. It's covered in spiders, spider webs, spooky. There's weird mushrooms in a circle around the house, in an almost perfect circle. Like, he didn't make any mistakes there.
Yeah.
That's impressive. It isn't like a weird, like, blob shape, which it probably would have been in real life. It is ominous because things just keep happening. He hears a rat in the walls and starts poking holes in the wall with a broom. They find a dumbwaiter, and, you know, it seems like it's an old house at first. Then there's a brownie. Not the edible kind. Well, I guess he probably could be edible, but not the chocolate kind. A little dude. A little Martin Short, a short Martin Short. I think this is one of his two most iconic roles of all time, this and Jack Frost. He did not get a mop, though, in this movie, unfortunately.
Sadly, he did not.
They discover secrets. Dipper finds the journal. He meets the author. I'm sorry. It's just, this would have been easier to avoid comparisons, I think, if they developed these, the things that were different, more. If they focused on Mallory's life at all, like for a minute.
Yeah.
Mallory is not a character in this movie. She's just a woman who has a sword. That's her character. Simon is just...
the smart one.
Yeah.
Josh, they are... they're Alvin and the Chipmunks. We have Simon. The smart one. Alvin is Jared. And then Theodore is Mallory. Wait. Yep, sure, why not? The plot of this movie is they just find... he finds a journal, takes it outside. They get captured by... Simon gets captured by goblins... a hobgoblin that Seth Rogen spits on Jared's eyes.
What a sentence.
Yeah, a hobgoblin who is Seth Rogen. Not played by Seth Rogen. A hobgoblin who is Seth Rogen spits on his eyes. Oh, I called you Boggart Honey in the beginning. There is the brownie is a little small creature in the house who's named Thimbletack. He's actually a good monster. He was friends with the author of Spiderwick. When he gets mad, he turns into a thing called a Boggart. Not from Harry Potter. A gray little ogre man who looks like Shrek. And then he gets calmed with honey. So Josh is Boggart Honey, because we do weird nicknames in this podcast for goddamn no reason. And now I'm stuck doing it for all eternity. What happened in this movie, Josh?
Surprisingly, not a lot.
Really not much. It was enjoyable. It falls into the curse of families not believing each other, who have no reason to not believe each other. That's why I said that Jared's a menace, but he deserves to be so.
Because no one is actually listening or paying attention to him.
Like, he's a dick, but they're a dick to him first.
retaliation. Like, when he's poking the wall and then accidentally, you know, shows where the dumbwaiter is, there's a lot of stuff that Thimbletack had stolen, like his sister's medal, and she's just like, how'd you do this? And he's just like, you really think that I stole this and then replastered the wall? And she's just like, well, I don't know how you did, but I know it was you.
They'd been there for less than a day at that point.
They'd been there for like a few hours, maybe.
How would he... that's one of the things... I was looking at Stranger Things, when they see the body get mutilated in front of them, and like, and he still did it! I don't know how, but witchcraft. Really? This movie had issues with that for sure. I know it happens in the book too, but you could at least build on maybe a backstory of him lying a lot. You could do, because he also in this movie never shows a history of lying from anything we've seen.
Yeah, like if anything, he's a great truth teller.
We have no knowledge to suspect otherwise.
I guess the idea is, well, they don't believe him, so maybe he lied. So we can assume he lied in the past. I'm not going to assume. This man was a liar. He does not lie in this film once, so there's no reason for him to have been a liar in the past. So there's also a thing that Mallory gets her hair tied to a headboard, like very much like the book picture as well, which I think is like, they can recreate that. That's kind of fun. But like, it's in a bunch of different knots and strands all across that I have no idea how she got undone. that fast. That seems like a complete menace to do. Menace? Seems like a complete awful... A bitch to do. There we go. That's a good word to use. They blame Jared because he's the troublemaker. He's mischievous.
And even though, again, we haven't seen him do anything like that.
And what's funny about it to me is that he was literally in a footlocker reading. And Simon, his brother, who he shares a room with, vouched for him for that. And they still think he did it. He literally has an alibi. That was corroborated.
But, of course, it was him. He did it.
But they also don't believe his truth-telling brother either. And that's not... Like, what? I don't know. There's a lot of things in this. I'm like, that's an odd choice because it works. There's things here that work in the book and it might just not adapt well as live action. For instance, the very end when Mulgaroth, the big bad, the monster, the way he gets defeated, I think works a lot better on a page as a funny, like satisfying subversion kind of thing than it does in a movie.
I mean, to be fair, they did build it up.
Yes, and I think they built up the way that the way our good guy could defeat him.
I thought it was a clever way of doing it.
I would have liked our heroes to do a bit more actual fighting to him first instead of just running away.
I mean, every time they got close to him, he would just smack them out of the way.
I will say, my favorite moment of this whole movie is, I love you, stab.
Like, imagine if he had been wrong.
Because in reality, that scene... Let's break that down a bit.
Well, okay.
Our big bad is a shapeshifter who turns into our hero's father, who is away because he cheated on his other mom and moved on and is now with someone else. And that's what he is supposed to be telling. How would you describe the rest of the scene, John?
Okay, so Mulgaroth, who's pretending to be his dad, comes in and he's just like, whoa, this is weird. What's going on? And, you know, Jared at first thinks like...
Mulgaroth is the villain, by the way, the big bad.
Yeah. And Jared has, you know, so far no reason to believe that it isn't his dad. But then his dad immediately is kind of like, oh, wow, what's that you're holding? And he's holding the book. And Jared's just like, okay, that's weird. And so he's like, what was the thing you wanted to tell me on the phone that I need you to tell me? Like, because now Jared knows what's happening and he needs to hear it from him because he knows that if Mulgaroth can't answer, then that's not his dad. And his dad's just like, I just wanted to tell you I love you. And Jared's like, nah, and
wrong stabs answer. Him. Which reminded me a lot of Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
Like, that is such a Percy Jackson kind of move. But seriously, that was great. And also shows how fucked their relationship is.
Yeah.
But what's funny about that is in real life to me, I feel like put in the spot, the dad might just say I love you in real life. Or might chicken out. If he's chicken out this long and not answering the phone, you think he would all of a sudden just say it in front of everyone? He might say, let's talk about it later. I can't, you know, there's yeah, you're right. There's ways he probably could have gone away, but the fact that I love you is the word that triggered him saying, my dad wouldn't tell me that.
To be fair, after he said, I love you, he tried to, you know, take the book from Jared again, and Jared's like, nah, stab.
And if you didn't get by this point, if you've not seen the movie, which is 20 years old, the bad guy wants the book. This book is a magical book. It's a special book. Let's call it Spider Chronicles because a man named Arthur Spiderwick, a young boy, a very old boy actually, wrote a field guide documenting this weird world he found. You know, like the three journals. And it has samples, it has rocks, it has wings, it has all these different things. It's a really cool book, which I wish as an audience we got to see more of. Just saying. It's a whole field guide. We see like three creatures or whatever. You know? Stupid. But Arthur Spiderwick wrote this giant book of amazing things, and Jared finds it. He reads it in the footlocker like earlier, which Simon doesn't believe he's reading. He loves his book. He reads it so thoroughly, and then it has so much knowledge about the entire world. The whole like, spooky world. The unnatural world, if you will. So Mulgaroth, the big ogre, wants to conquer, maybe? Is evil for evil?
It's not really made clear.
And so he wants the book because it has all the knowledge of everything else around him so he can conquer things easier. That part makes complete sense. I would have loved it if there were literally any obstacles for our heroes in this movie.
Yeah.
It's very linear for them. Not even a struggle to do one thing. Let's go to Aunt Lucinda. Okay. Let's get back. Okay. Let's go see Arthur Spiderwick. But he's dead. Maybe not. Okay, let's go find him. Oh, we need a griffin to get there. In old wood elvish. Huh. Damn. We should just... That path won't work. Actually, it will. It's written right here. Cool. If they find out you're here, you'll be stuck here for eternity. We'll leave. Okay. Like, it's just... No consequences.
I love how, after the first time Jared takes the book outside the circle, he knows how bad it is to take the book outside the circle. Yet every time he leaves the circle, he takes it!
Oh, there's a circle. Yeah. So the circle is a magic circle. It's a protection spell, like in Gravity Falls. And it would have been really cool if they... I think it's interesting that they don't do it more, because the bad guys use a potion on the first circle. Just keep making more circles, bitch! How much potion can they have? Why'd you ever stop circling? I also want to know how we discover how Arthur Spiderwick. I think that spinoff to this would be really fun, of Arthur Spiderwick.
Of just him figuring out all this stuff.
Yeah, like how do you find out tomato sauce was a bomb for goblins? Which, let's talk about that again, because a bomb for a goblin specifically.
Why tomato juice?
I love the fact that this movie has so much mass murder in it.
There's a lot of death in this.
Like, and it's not, like, tame. You see limbs melting, faces being destroyed. Like, it's not...
It earns its PG rating.
Yes, which I'm actually glad about. This is the same rating as, like, Inside Out, Josh.
That's stupid.
I think also, overall, the creatures look decent for the CGI. Mol'Goroth, the villain, does not, which is upsetting.
Yeah, like, overall, like, I was surprised by how pretty good the effects were in this.
Especially since most of the creatures we see in this movie specifically are disgusting.
Yes.
So the bad CGI parts make up for that. It enhances the disgustingness. Yeah, I think I just really wanted to see a slower pace. Just give me 2.5 hours at least, and then we can see the whole world of these more creatures, and it would be adding some stuff to the books potentially in some parts, but that's not a bad thing.
When they go find Spiderwick, like, at the place wherever he got taken to, it's clearly, like, a different world dimension thing. I don't know. And they never explain what it is or where they are.
Also, the griffin is just a magic train ride. Like, it's an automatic teleporting device. I wish that there were consequences to what they did. I guess there are some. Like, the fact that he took the book out in the first place and then the story happened. But that's not, like, really a consequence. That's just shit happens.
Yeah.
I still love the detail. I love this in the book too, about the whole thing with the sight.
Yeah.
Because I wonder how many people that Hobgoblin has spat on. This Hobgoblin played by Seth Rogen. No, sorry. This Hobgoblin, who is Seth Rogen, spits on people's eyes, and then the chemicals of his spit get into your eyes and you can start seeing the world called with the sight. Like true sight in D&D, kind of. And it's a really cool idea. Otherwise, they has a thing called the Seeing Stone, which is never called that in this movie. I mean, I guess you can see it's a rock and you can see through it, but that's interesting. But also, it's hollow in this, right?
Yeah.
I thought it had like a lining of glass or liquid sling in between the things you're seeing through in the book. I guess it's a lot easier in a prop department to just make it how it is. Can we talk about also that catch? Mallory has to catch this rock while fighting goblins she can't see. And she catches it perfectly. She's a skilled person. Why is she not the main character? It's like in fucking, what's that movie? Transformers? Where the main character is Shia LaBeouf for no goddamn reason, when it should have been Michaela.
Yeah.
Who is competent, interesting, strong, has a backstory. Shia LaBeouf is just like, I'm a suburban kid. Then I'm like, oh, cool. You literally are just a man. That's always the other lead part. But the Hobgoblin is interesting. I wish we saw more of them. The fact that he has a tragic backstory where his family was his entire family was murdered by Mol'Goroth. I mean, they never touched on that like much. Like, it's just nothing has weight. It's all too fast.
Yeah.
What is the best part of this movie to you, Josh?
Ooh,
besides the "I love you" stab.
I think the best joke is when they're going to see their great aunt. They come out of the sewer and there's this troll that's coming after them, and then a truck runs over it, and the guy comes out of the truck and he's just like, did I just run over someone? And Jared's like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, he sees the green goo, like the blood, the guts on this truck, and then doesn't question that. My favorite Lies movie is from Aunt Lucinda, their old crazy aunt, who they go see, because she wasn't actually crazy. She saw, you know, these creatures, which I have a lot of questions about. I want to dive into that in a minute. But I love when they visit her. There's a line that she says that made me so sad, and we do not talk about it again. She gets this giant, like, chunk on her arm, a bite mark on her arm. There's a Lions movie about self-harm. She says, they say suicide, I say fairies, and then you get sent here.
Yeah, that was a really good line.
And I'm like, oh my god, that's insane. Because I think that she's committing self-harm and trying to kill herself. Of course, she's like, ah, fairies, goblins, a goblin did it, I was bitten. And they think she's crazy and she's going to keep hurting herself. And I'm like, that is incredibly dark. How long did she last as a child before she needed to get help?
That is a great question.
Because when she is 6 years old, Aunt Lucinda, her dad, Arthur Spiderwick, is taken away by little fairy sprites to the weird world we were talking about earlier. She was six. She would die. But she didn't, because she grew up in that house still. Fill the pantries with tomato sauce, all that stuff. She actually fully has them. She had her a will.
Mr. Spiderwick even, like, made mention of, like, his wife. So, like, I guess she was there with their daughter.
I guess that's true. Did that mean that the wife thought she was crazy as well?
That is a great question.
Because what did you think your husband was doing?
He was just putting salt everywhere. You're saying that's not a normal thing to do?
But, like, his life's work, this book. He's just going out every day and just putting stuff. Like, I found fairy wings. Look, I have proof of it in my book here. I don't believe you. Like, what? What is the story here? I have way more questions about this family that I don't care about Jared, Simon, and Mallory as much as I care about the Spiderwick themselves, that family. A follow-up question to that. There is a painting or picture. I think it's a photograph. Aunt Lucinda, the ma, her mom, and her dad, Arthur Spiderwick, all together. She clearly is a young woman in that picture, but her dad was gone when she was six. What? I think it's just a matter of the PD was not discussed properly at that point.
Yeah.
It's just there's some weird things in that. Isn't that family more interesting to you than the actual main characters?
Yes.
The more you think about it, it's like, oh, there's a story here. But yes, I agree that line about, I think the truck part you mentioned earlier was definitely the funniest line in the whole movie. I think this movie made me want to watch Lights Out again because they fucking believe each other.
Yeah.
That's a good movie. David Sandberg, he's a good director.
Yeah.
I think that everyone should go watch this movie right now on HBO Max. Or sorry, when this episode comes out, it'll be called Max.
Yay.
Wait, hold on. Do we just go to max.com then?
I have no idea.
Because that's confusing to me too. I feel like it's not enough time of a window change to let people know who have HBO Max that it's a new website, right? Like, there are moms or something who might go in there once a month or something, or 2 months. You know, it's just, the rebrand is stupid. I think that this movie, yeah, it's faster than it needs to be. It has a lot of heart in it, though.
Yeah.
Both Freddie Highmores are working their butt off. I would love to see more of the Mallory actress as well as the mom actress do more stuff.
Yeah.
I looked them up. I've actually not seen them in pretty much anything else at all. So I'd love to see them in more stuff. I might go search them out because they're also great performers. Although the funniest, you said the funniest line in the movie is a truck bit. My funniest line in the movie is not intentionally funny. And I said it to you last night. They're in a car on the way back from seeing Aunt Lucinda. It's Jared, Mallory, the sister, and their mom who sees them. And she's mad at them for not being in the house, for just skipping. Which, in the book, they're skipping school. They're skipping. Like, that's why she's so angry also. Is that they skip school, Mallory skipped fencing. I'm like, that's a lot more interesting than going to see Aunt Lucinda and she's being mad at you for no reason. Weird, right?
Yeah.
There's a line in the car where she says, what happened? And if you say, like, fairies or magic or goblins, please just don't. And then Jared says, it is. And then Mallory says, it's true. Like, backing him up. You know, another person that you should believe as a mother. All your kids are saying this now? Maybe it's true. And the way she says, no, it's not! Like, it's so hilarious to me. the aggression she has snapping back at her children. She has no problem yelling at her kids the entire movie. And she talks about that, saying how she's trying to work on not yelling anymore. Proving, you know, parents are still problems, they're still working on stuff. Not the best parent in the world. But also, no, it's not. Go look at that one clip near the end, or near, after the Aunt Lucinda part in the hospital. It's really fucking funny. It's true. No, it's not! Just, like, goddamn! Believe your fucking kids, like, get your priorities right? What a weird character. That mom needs help. She needs therapy.
They all do.
Everyone in this movie needs therapy. What is the weirdest part of this movie to you? I have one.
I don't know.
For me, it's that at the end, when Arthur Spiderwick returns, first up, the whole moment of him returning and Aunt Lucinda seeing him feels like a season finale of a show moment, like wrapping after everything's happened. Like, I literally feel like I'm watching the end of a season. I'm like, this is not earned. Nothing at all with Arthur Spiderwick is earned, because there's no mystery behind him. There's no, like, and you can have, like, a lack of mystery, but, like, having some kind of build-up to him at all, of, like, seeing him being a big deal at either point we see him. Neither time is a big deal. Like, why did the Sprites send him back to just take him back away again? Like, what? Why did they agree to that? That's bizarre. But my question with this scene that's weird, why did they turn her back into a little girl?
Yeah, that's weird.
I think the idea was she can get off a life with him now that he missed. But it's very weird.
Because, like, now she's an old woman in a child's body.
Does she have to go through puberty again?
Well, he never aged, so maybe she's not going to?
That's even weirder.
I don't know.
Because if she was never going to age, then why not just bring her there, as she is? But, like, I thought the idea was that she could have, you know, a full childhood. Because if that's the case, period again, menopause again, all those other health issues, having to, you know, relive. Do you lose memory? Like, that's, I have questions. That's the weirdest part of the movie to me, by far. I would rather watch this than Phantom of the Megaplex.
Oh, yes.
Any other thoughts on Spider-Man Chronicles, the movie, besides it should be a TV show instead?
I think it's fun. The potential for something very interesting and cool is there. But I think with the runtime, it just doesn't help its case.
Does this movie make you want to read the books instead?
It does pique my interest, and it makes me want to seek out the series.
That's one thing about this movie I think it could do well, is make people want to read the books and fill in maybe some of the blanks. That's like the best part of it to me, honestly, is that, hey, there's something better. like even like the last Airbender movie, for all the shit it is, it still makes you want to be like, oh, let's watch something better, the show. And I'm not comparing this to Last Airbender in terms of insulting this, because this is not nearly as bad as that at all. It's just kind of fun. Like I said, I enjoyed this very much. But I think what I enjoyed most about this was the world it set up, and I want to dive more into that, and I want to see these characters' lives more. I want to see Mallory besides just older sister who has a sword. I want to see Simon besides maybe autistic, definitely nerd, like as sister.
I'm just imagining that on a poster.
Simon, maybe autistic, definitely nerd. Honestly, I think we need that on t-shirts. People would probably buy that t-shirt, though, for real.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Josh, you know what it's time for?
Things.
You know what segment's next. You know, what is it?
You yell things at me.
That's the whole show. What is this? This segment is called Super Weird Stories, where I yell at Josh. This segment is what goes to different things in comic books, mostly, but things that are about comic books or comic book culture or superhero culture, and discuss weird, interesting, or wholesome problematic things. But today, I'm not giving you a story. I'm giving you just kind of fun stuff.
Yay.
You've seen Guardians 3.
I have.
And you've seen Guardians 1.
Yes.
And you've seen the Guardians Holiday Special.
Uh-huh.
What character is only in those three movies?
Cosmo?
Yes.
Aha!
And we're going to talk today about Cosmo the Space Dog.
Yes.
I knew that would make you happy.
I like Cosmo.
Cosmo, if you're not aware, in the movie, was gender bent to a girl instead of a boy in the comics, which, of course, got people mad for, they're changing the dog's gender to woke. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's a dog.
The reason why, though, James actually has a reason for that. It's not just because, why not? The reason why is because the actual Soviet space dog it's based on was a girl. They're trying to make that part more realistic. I'm like, okay, cool. So if you're not aware, the Soviets did send a dog to space in real life. which I think is just a funny concept in general. And that dog went through stuff in real life. We will not today talk about reality, because reality does not matter here. Cosmo the Space Dog was a test animal, and this is now in Marvel Universe. This is Earth 616, not movie 616, Earth Prime, the main universe Marvel world. Cosmo the Space Dog was a test animal for the Soviet space program during the Cold War. His spacecraft drifted out of Earth's orbit, eventually sending him to nowhere, you know, the celestial head we saw, a disembodied celestial head turned space station. He was mutated by cosmic radiation, gaining psychic powers, and became chief of security at nowhere.
As one does.
I wish that was in the movie.
I think that was actually in the Guardians of the Galaxy game, I think.
Because Cosmo in the first movie was just a prisoner. Cosmo helped Nova. Like, if you're not aware of the Nova, there's the Nova Corps in Guardians 1. But Nova, this is referring to, I think, Richard Rider Nova? Yes. Who was the first main Nova character we get, like the superpowered Nova in the Marvel Universe. This sentence for you, Josh, is going to be wild. Ready for it?
Yes.
Cosmo helps Nova fight off zombies.
Naturally.
On the head of nowhere, and charted a course to a planet called Kike. Kaich? Kitch? Kvaich?
It's one of those.
K-V-C-H. Kvch. Yes, it is Kvch. So you charted a course to planet Kvch to find a cure for the transmode virus which created those zombies. I want to see that movie. The Nova movie should be Cosmo and Nova fighting zombies.
Yes.
I would watch the hell out of that. That's a new Disney Plus show. Dog, man, zombie. Cosmo allowed the Guardians of the Galaxy to use Nowhere as their base of operations and help them when needed. I love that Cosmo allowed the Guardians to use it, as opposed to the movie, the Guardians kind of just own Cosmo as their dog. Which, yeah, that's fine too. Also, Cosmo becomes an actual Guardian in that movie. Interesting.
That's fun.
It is fun. Cosmo is a good dog. So what do you think so far about this fighting zombies part? Kind of fun?
Yes.
When the Guardians disbanded after the Thanos Imperative, which is a thing we don't have time for that today, Star-Lord left Cosmo with a task to form a new team called the Annihilators, which we talked about before in previous episodes. And Cosmo convinced Silver Surfer, Gladiator, Beta Ray Bill, if you're not aware, is the real holder of Stormbreaker, like in the comics, Quasar, and Ronan the Accuser to join the team. Ronan is different than in the comics than he is in the movie. Because that team would be very funny if Ronan was the exact same way and just wanted to kill everyone.
Yes.
But I love the idea of a team with Beta Ray Bill, Silver Surfer, Ronan, and Cosmo on a team. Cosmo is just a cool character in general. And so far, what do you think of these fun little things I told you about Cosmo?
I would love to see a Beta Ray Bill and Cosmo team up.
Are you ready for a quote from Cosmo?
Sure.
That does it. That enough. No more Mr. Nice Dog. Now Cosmo will hurt everyone. I think Cosmo deserves to hurt everyone. Because Cosmo is good dog.
Yes.
So let's dive a bit into the time of that Cosmo had on the planet of the head of nowhere. Like I said before, Cosmo met a very distraught Nova shortly after he witnessed Suspensor turn into a zombie. Someone that Nova knows. He told Nova that he was on Nowhere, a city built inside of the head of a giant, you know, celestial, and something called World Mind then informed Nova that he had deciphered the writing on the wall, which was a countdown of a timer. And that timer showed that, and that beings from all over the universe have come to Nowhere for a kind of front row seat to observe the end of the universe. Cosmo brought Nova up to speed on the events, and the Xandarian World Mind added any data he had at his disposal. Cosmo explained that he was mainly concerned with the safety of the remaining citizens of Nowhere, of course, naturally, who were safely hidden away in a dimensional envelope he wore on his collar.
Naturally.
Cosmo's a good chief of security, then. I keep all my people on my collar. Where they had gone into hiding after a group called the Luminals brought something in a big box. Not long after, Cosmo and Nova... That doesn't say what it is. They brought something in a big box? Okay. Not long after, Cosmo and Nova were ambushed by more zombies, some of which were surviving members of Suspensor's former team, and determined that the creature known as Abyss was behind the mayhem. Together, they fought off the attacks and sealed Abyss back inside his prison. And Cosmo then charted a course into the birthplace of the Phalanx, the planet Kivich, in hopes of helping Nova to find a new means to cure the transmitted virus that was slowly killing him. Alarms were triggered when an infected Gamora and Drax, under the control of the Phalanx, slaughtered many residents in the search of Nova. Cosmo arrived too late to stop them, but before they could follow the same path as Nova, through the Continuum Cortex. So they found the cure and stuff, but I just fucking love that he had people in an envelope in his collar. I think Nova, Cosmo's just a good little boy. Good dog.
Yes.
You might be aware that Cosmo has a white spacesuit at all times to keep himself safe. He also has a tesseracted storage crystal chip. Built in a lab on Nowhere, Cosmo wears it on his collar. This finitely powered hardware can store the entire population of Nowhere in an instant. What a wild ability to just have. Let's get in my collar. Like, that's crazy. Also, according to the Xandarian World Mine, here's a fun fact. Cosmo is a Golden Retriever Labrador crossmix. With all this information, have you determined today if Cosmo is good dog or bad dog?
I'm going to go with Cosmo as good dog.
What part here is most interesting to you so far?
I gotta say the envelope on the collar.
Not the zombies fighting alongside Nova?
Nah, that's pretty par for the course.
Fair enough, but an envelope on the collar that stores the entire population of Nowhere is cooler to you or more weird?
It's a bit out there.
I gotta say, I agree with you. That's our episode. That's what I have today on Cosmo. Maybe next time I bring you even more Cosmo facts. You never know. I can always bring out more Cosmo facts.
Good.
That's our episode today, guys. My name is Sean. Like I said, this is Josh. I don't know why I'm introducing us now. I'm in a closet for too long. Not in a gay way, but a literal closet. Thank you for listening to the episode. Please email the show at podgeekspeak@gmail.com or tweet at us with hashtag GeekSpeakPod and or at GeekSpeakPod on Twitter. And you can find me online at The Theater Nerd or on Instagram or TikTok at That Nerd in Theater. And theater is E-R, not R-E. Josh, where can people find you, Rudy Rudolph, online?
Oh, I'm at places. I'm on Instagram at G_Rudy16, Twitter, G_Rudy28, and YouTube at Josh Rudolph.
That's a wrap?
I guess.
What do you think of the Meg 2? You excited?
Who isn't excited for the Meg 2?
I want more sneaky sharks. I'm so happy for more sneaky sharks. Next episode will probably be about Fast and the Furious.
We'll see.
In theory, we might have a guest on. We might go down a rabbit hole of 9 different films or 10 different films. I have to watch 10 films. Dear God.
You got this.
You did give me a lot of movies. He gave me all the Fast and the Furious series. And I am scared because I've watched them all one time, and that's so much.
You'll be fine.
Do you think they're worth it to general audiences?
They're definitely worth it. It's not until, like, 4 when the series really finds its footing, and then 5 when it's like, yes, this is very good.
I think it's a really funny selling point. It's like when people say, you know, season 1, season 2, season 3, they're all pretty bad. Season 4 is where it's at.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the first 3, like, there is something of value to them.
You gave the fucking first one a 5 out of 10.
I still had fun.
DVD players. What a journey. Anyway, that's our show, everyone, today. Go follow us. Please give us a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. It really helps the show out. And please give us your support on Twitter. And, like, on email, it would, again, really help us out a lot. Thank you all so much for listening today. We will see you all, hopefully, next week.
Woo!
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.